Hey, anyone want to talk about UX design? Because I'm just curious.
Why did you feel the need to start your own? What did the other communities not have that you needed?
I just want to make it fun and make everyone feel welcome.
But I'd also love to know where these 150,000 people have come from.
We have an Instagram, 2 million too.
Your Instagram account has 2 million followers?
Yeah, our new one.
Let's talk about money a little bit.
Last year, we made about $100,000 in brand deals. So I'm hoping to double or triple that this year.
I've seen very few posts that have more engagement than that. Do you know around how many views it has?
75 million.
Jesus, wow.
Yeah, LinkedIn, man.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zierer, and on this show, I speak to creators about the craft and business of being a creator and what that even means. Today, we're speaking with Grace Ling, founder of the thriving Design Buddies community, which turns 5 years old this month, has over 150,000 members, and generates $1 million in ARR. She is also a talented content creator and is on all the usual platforms, but has found particular success on LinkedIn, where she has nearly 50,000 followers. Finally, she's the co-host of a new podcast called How Creators Make Money. Grace, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Yes, no,
I've been
of
a big fan of your podcast too.
Thank you. Yes, you sent me the media kit for your own podcast, and I was surprised. I don't know if I was surprised, but it was a nice surprise to see Creator Spotlight referenced on there on your market landscape.
Yeah. I love podcasts. I listen to so many of them.
Mm-hmm. And you've been on quite a few, but this is your first time hosting one with How Creators Make Money. We'll get into that in a second, though. I want to talk about Design Buddies first, but before we get into that, too, I would love to situate myself and our listeners and have you tell me, when you're talking about design and the type of design that Design Buddies refers to, what are we discussing? What kind of work is this? What does design mean in this context?
Mm-hmm. Design Buddies mainly started as UX design, which is user experience design, product design. So I would say 70% of our members are interested in that. We have a lot of people in graphic design, illustration, art, as well as product managers and engineers and founders who are just interested in design too. So I actually made Design Buddies because I felt like the design world 5 years ago when I was a student is very gatekeepy, and I just want to make it fun and make everyone feel welcome. So it started as UX design because I was personally a UX designer, but we're trying to expand beyond UX design to graphic design, art, and all sorts of design. But mainly right now it's UX design.
Mm-hmm. And so what is Design Buddies? I believe it's a Discord. I think there's courses. What are all the different things that together make up Design Buddies?
We have so many things. Overall goal is to help increase the opportunities for designers. Mm-hmm. And we do this by working with companies to hire designers. We do this by providing programs for designers to get practical experience and learn design, events to help them connect to each other, conferences as well. And I, in my team, we also make educational content. So Design Buddies is not just me, but we have three co-founders and a team of awesome content creators, as well as engineers and all of that too.
Mm-hmm. So I forget if this was on another podcast or something I read on your Twitter or whatever, but when you started it, you had been participating in a number of other design focused communities. You were trying to, I think you were studying, you were doing some computer science, or was it pre-med?
Both.
Both. And you kind of decided, I don't really want to do either of these things. I actually want to do design. And you started exploring different avenues into that. And you participated in other communities. Why did you feel the need to start your own? What did the other communities not have that you needed?
Ooh, I remember I had so much imposter syndrome when I was starting out in design, because I actually studied bioengineering and computer engineering in school. Because I grew up in this town called Cupertino, California. Yeah. And everyone was I want to be a doctor, engineer, lawyer, or failure. So I was okay, I'll be a doctor, engineer, or whatever, to impress my parents and society. So I took on that. I wish I liked it. I have so much respect for people who do engineering and doctor. That's so much work. But for me, I just felt so much imposter syndrome because I changed my career so much, five times in college. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do because I liked doing so many things, which ultimately led me to quit my job a year ago. But yeah, Design Buddies, because I joined other design communities at that time. So I made it April 10th, 2020. Mm-hmm. So it's 5 years tomorrow that I made the Discord. Yeah. And I just wanted to make some friends.
Discord.
Yeah, I started as a Discord, and almost 100,000 people joined the Discord since. Yeah. And I felt like other design communities at that time, I was like really scared to post to them because I remember I asked like questions. I didn't know anything else. And people were like, oh, educate yourself. Like, oh,
you kind of felt like everything was a stupid question and people were making you feel like it was a stupid question.
Yeah, that's the vibe I got from the responses I got from like certain design communities I was happened to be in. So I was like, oh, I just like want to make some friends and learn design. I don't think people need to be so like gatekeepy and stuff. So I made a Discord and it grew a lot. I think we had our first 1,000 members in the first month. Because I kept hosting like cute little Zoom events where we were like make something in Figma together and kept growing in that way. And then I feel like COVID was a unique time because people were seeking like community. And so I just came in at the right time too. So it grew really fast.
Yeah, I was going to ask where those first 1,000 people came from. But if it was like right at the beginning of COVID, that it was a time when people were very open to joining things. So it was kind of just like were you, was it on Reddit, on Twitter? Like where were these, where did these 1,000 people like find the Discord from?
Yeah, before I barely knew anyone in design when I started Design Buddies actually. So I was very active in Facebook groups.
Oh.
It's so random. But in Zoom, there's like the Zoom University memes for quarantine teens. Like the whole like meme series. And there's like subtle Asian traits. And particularly this group, Asian Creative Network. So just like generally creative people were in like this Facebook group. It was pretty big. And I like that group. I made a lot of friends in that group. So I was just like posting in the group, hey, anyone want to talk about UX design? Because I was just curious. I want to learn more. And this group seems friendly, unlike the other groups I was in. So, and then like 300 people commented on it. And so I added them all to like a messenger chat. And it was just like chaotic. So I made the Discord the day after. Yeah.
That's real quick. So it's really interesting to me that you were doing this originally on Facebook groups. Facebook is such a blind spot for me now. I mean, in my teens and early college, in early 20s, I was really active on there, but it's been since like 2018 or 2019 that I just kind of totally withdrew. Is this still like a source of activity for you?
Not that much. I've noticed I kind of withdrew from it like after 2020, but I think with the new updates Zuck shared on, I listened to the Colin Samir podcast and I saw Zuck being interviewed. Yeah. And I had this friends tab and he couldn't reveal like specifically because under NDA, but like the shift towards more friends and Facebook Creator Funds actually pays the most that I've noticed compared to all the other creator funds.
Mr. Beast was saying
there.
That on that interview.
Yeah. So I can see Facebook kind of making a comeback. So there's so many people on Facebook. There's probably the most people in the world on
Facebook.
It's like
Facebook. 3 billion. Yeah.
And I think it became like a little bit uncool when people's parents became on it. It's like, oh, the old people are finding out. I think.
Yeah.
That's what my friends say, at least. But I still love Facebook. I'm still active on it. I also feel like as a creator, Facebook content and as a creator, many creators make money through brand deals. They don't really care about Facebook views. It's not like the same as like LinkedIn views or like TikTok or Instagram views.
Yeah, because it's such like a generalized audience maybe.
Okay,
I want to get more back into that, the monetization aspect in a little bit. But going back to Design Buddies. So you said that about 100,000 people have joined the Discord. On the website, you say there's about 150,000 members. I'm sure maybe that's like newsletter people included too. I'd love to know how you tally up that number. But I'd also love to know, since those early Facebook days, where these 100,000 plus 150,000 people have come from.
Yeah, so the 50,000 is like our newsletter, and we noticed like a lot of people who are not in our Discord come to our events, and they like talk amongst themselves too, and like make friends through that. It's like really hard to calculate exact size, so it's like an estimate. We have like 70,000 followers on LinkedIn. We have an Instagram 2 million too, but I count. And we also have like a Twitter and YouTube
Your Instagram account has 2 million followers?
Yeah, our new one. We're launching a new brand called Co-Create, which I can talk a bit more later. But it's like the one that I run with my team. And so I don't really know how many engaged members because we have a lot of people who come to our events from Instagram, from LinkedIn that are not in our Discord. So I just started counting them. And I just kind of like add a little buffer. But it's like Discord plus email list plus like some more people. But I really kind of count. I try to like not be too hung up on like vanity metrics, like community members, but really all the DMs I get and the people chatting in the community as well.
Well, okay. I'm curious to learn more about the Discord because this is something like I'm plenty active on like Instagram and and Twitter, kind of just in my personal social media usage and engagement with group chats and such. But I'm not in any Discords. I think I've joined a couple in the past, but it's just not a channel I've actively engaged in. So tell me about the culture in the Discord and how you've organized it. Like, what are the sub communities within the community?
Oh yeah, there's so many. There's always like couple hundred people, like 500 people joining each week on average. Wow.
What about leaving? Do people leave? Do you remove people? Like, sorry, I'm curious how you maintain like the health of the community in that way.
That's a great question. I have friendly moderators, and okay, these moderators, I pick people who are already active in the Discord, and they just help remove spam because like the Discord's so big. It's really easy to get like random bots who join and just like spam in every channel. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the automod doesn't detect it. So we need
people coming
in
just to promote their own thing.
Yeah. We should like direct them to the right channel so that general chat doesn't turn just promotional. Cause I've seen so many communities during COVID die because it just becomes like a promotional hell.
Yeah.
So I try to like be really mindful about not heading that way. And we're going 5 years strong without it heading that way. I try to be really active in the community myself, as well as like having a team of moderators that's also pretty active. And they just like kind of do it on their own time. Whenever they see a spam, they just delete it. Mm-hmm. I also have bots to remove the spam. But our moderators, there's not only they're there to like clear out the spam, but they're there to engage the community. People who are already active and talking and welcoming new members is important, because I feel like one feedback I got early on was like, it feels like a clique. Which is like good and bad, because I know people have branched off into their own groups and they found their friends through Design Buddies, which is awesome. But I don't want that to be a deter to new members coming in.
Well, I think that's interesting. I want to linger on that for a second, because the clickiness, like, I think in one way it is good if cliques start to form, cliques plural within a greater community, because what that means is like, is culture is taking root, right? Is like things growing and going beyond just like the initial unsureness of like a bunch of people in a room. You know, you want groups to start to form, but you also want those groups to be permeable. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's always about trying to find a fine balance, because we have so many people in our Discord and there's so many people joining every day, so there's always like fresh people every single day. And I've also noticed that there's about a couple hundred people who talk and like 10,000 people who lurk every day too.
That's the internet. So, that's a pretty good ratio though, kind of like a Twitter or something.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people lurking in the Discord because they're just like afraid to chat because there's so many people looking. So we're always trying to figure out how to get more people talking, but at the same time, I don't think it's like a bad thing people lurk. We have a lot of people like very engaged in our events chats and in-person events, but not very active on Discord. So try to find the fine balance. Some people like prefer to lurk instead of like talking every day. Another thing to note is we have Design Buddies mainly started as like mostly junior designers in the beginning, but it's been 5 years. We've seen these designers
grow. These juniors
are
now seniors, yeah.
Yeah, they're now seniors, and now they're now like mentors and helping out the new seniors. So it's like been really cool to see that happen. And most of our senior designers who are active have been in design since they were a junior, and they received a lot of help from senior designers early in the career, so I just wanted to give back. But I would say like most people are pretty junior, looking for their first job in design, because I feel like people who are stable in their career wouldn't spend their free time talking about design outside of work.
So actually, this is something that's always really interesting to me about career or about communities like this, where especially when they're oriented around getting a job, is like people are people are very active when they want to get a job, and there's a lot, they get a lot out of what they put in. But if you're deeper in your career, which you're also probably older, maybe you've got a family or there's other hobby, like whatever, you have less and less time on the average person, right, to participate in a community that's built around this. And I think that's such a challenge for people managing this, is like maintaining the supply of like seniority or mentorship or like experts while the supply of like while the demand increases as like more and more people who are junior come in. How do you manage that?
I've noticed a lot of more senior designers, they're like my in real life friends. Mm-hmm. So I host a lot of design meetups across like SF, LA, around the world. And I become friends with them and they join the Discord, and then they're pretty active in there too. And these in-person events help people build more connection to the community. Yeah. And the community has always been free because I never wanted to add a paywall to anybody in the world who wants to access like connection and free resources. And people seem to like, that's how it grew so fast. It's like, it's always been free. So we monetize through like premium products and like sponsorships and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I tried in my personal friend circle, people are pretty senior in their career. Since I kind of grew up with them, they've like been in design their whole career. So they're like mid to senior people, and they just like join because I don't know, I just friends with them in real life.
Which creates more accountability because if it's more relationships based and relationships with you, and you can kind of call on these people, hey, if you're enjoying this episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. We release a new one every Thursday. Enjoy. Okay. Just a couple more things about Design Buddies. So the 1 million ARR, in terms of percentages of different sources, how would you say that breaks down? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So last year we made about that. Most of it comes from our design cohorts. So last year I made a big business decision by merging with this company called UX Go. And me and Leon have been working together for over a year. This is random, but how we decided to and come to that was he reached out to me like back in 2023. We worked on another startup together, two different startup ideas together. Our skills complement. And because we've merged, they have this design cohort program. And so this design cohort, it's like an intensive program in 10 weeks. These designers who are usually grad students or students or career transitioners trying to get their first job, they learn how to ship a product from zero to one, all the way from like research, prototyping to research, ideating, prototyping, iterating, testing, iterating, and all that. And the goal of that program is to try to be a better alternative to boot camps, which have scammed a lot of students in the past, and like much cheaper alternative to like grad school.
Which I saw, this is like, I saw on the website for a 10-week course, it's about $6,600, right?
Yeah. And then we have about 40 students. We do the 4 times a year for 4 students each. So that's like bulk of our revenue. We also do a lot of, I handle a lot of brand deals. So brand deals is very unstable, but last year we made about $100,000 in brand deals.
Hard to make those recurring.
Yeah, we're experimenting with the recurring one, but the cohort stuff, we always follow up every time. So that's the reoccurring one. For the stuff, the brand deal stuff, mostly I'm handling that with the partnership stuff is we made about $100,000 last year in brand deals. Most of it is from events and like content, like videos I'll make with design tools. This year, it's about $40,000 so far. So I'm hoping to double or triple that this year. There's a lot of money in design tools and vibe coding tools right now. So I've been leveraging that too to make that reoccurring, trying to develop deeper relationships. The other part of revenue comes from recruiting. And so companies would pay, like for example, like VC-backed startups would pay like $30,000 to match them with a founding designer. Yeah. And so I'm always trying to build my network of like people hiring as well as like designers, like really crack designers looking for jobs. And then, like,
so wait, I just want to bump in for a second. I went through your past year of tweets and you've been using the word Riz a lot and you're talking about Riz as a service, which I think like in a serious manner, though, like what you're talking about is like your kind of fearlessness in how you socialize with people and your like ability to connect people and kind of that thick skin you were talking about. Like, it's clear to me that like from, you know, researching you for this interview, like you are somebody who likes connecting people and likes and does so in kind of like a really earnest, hard on your sleeve way. So like that's kind of what you're describing here with the recruiting is like you have built up this network in this way and you are like really good at kind of like managing and understanding what the breadth of this network in your head too. And so when you say Riz as a service, like in this particular case, you could call your recruiting services Riz as a service.
Yeah, I could. I just try to Riz people up. I've noticed that like when people get Rizzed up, like genuine Riz, like if I really like something about someone, I will like mention it, make it clear, like, yo, you're like cracked, man. I say cracked a lot too.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I'll make them like know that too. Because I really appreciate people who do that to me too. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've been connecting people for fun just because the more care and love I give, like just like helping people, it always like it comes back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just like help people without any expectations. So I know the job market sucks and I want to help my friends get hired because I know it's a really stressful time. So I just like start doing that. And then I was like, oh, there's a bunch of companies paying $30,000 for a founder's fee. For a senior designer, it's like $10,000 to $15,000 for a mid-level, $5,000. I'm just like, wow, this is a lot.
Like, I'm just like
making an intro email.
Yeah.
So I'm always, in terms of monetization, I'm always trying to find ways like, hey, how can we keep the, how can we like keep the community free, inclusive, and try to help, like, cause I made design buddies cause I felt like other communities were too gatekeepy and I never want to be gatekeeping in any way. Like, I want people from like all countries in the world to access design
buddies. Okay, wait, real quick question. Cause we keep coming back to this gatekeeping question. And to me, like, gatekeeping, I'm, you know, it all depends on the scenario. I'm pro gatekeeping in that, like, as a filter for quality. And I think with a community, there gets to a certain point of scale where you need these filters for quality. And where I'm going with this is, like, you made a post on LinkedIn recently about how you would not want to take VC money to scale design buddies. And so there's a point where, like, let's say it's a community of 5 million people, you know, that's a cartoonishly big number from where it is today, but like, then like it, that might be too big to manage. So my question here is, where is the point of scale where you think you don't know if you'd want to surpass that? Like, things might start to fall apart and you would have to institute practices or systems that you might refer to as gatekeepy.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I also pro gatekeepy in, like, depending on the scenario.
Yeah.
For example, my friend circle and all the parties I host, like my personal parties, this is very gatekeepy.
Well, yeah, because this is in the real world too. You can't have 100,000 people in your house.
Yeah. But for people, for example, the cohort where people had to pay tuition, we're there to make sure there's accountability in it. Because we're also paying coaches and dedicating a lot of resources to helping them grow in their design. So we interview them. They had to pay a deposit to interview. They were refundable deposit to interview. And interview is also a way for them to ask questions for the program too, and
make sure it's right for them,
like a right fit, and they're committed. And they have to pay the tuition to access the intense program. So that is gatekeepy, just because it's so much resource to curate that crowd of students, and these students collab with the startup. So
okay, so what I'm getting here is that, like, the community itself, in terms of the Discord newsletter, etc., can get as big as it can get, really, and that's not really a problem. But then it's the more like core intensive, like engaged services that you offer that then have that built in. I'm also curious where, so that $1 million in revenue from last year, how does that get spent? I'm sure some of it's to you, some of it is to your partner at UXGO, Leon, some of it's to these coaches. If you could give some sort of like percentage breakdown of how you spend that revenue.
Yeah, right now, everything goes back into reinvesting into our business to throw bigger events, to pay coaches, to pay contractors, engineers. We are working on a new game called Fluffle, which is like a cute bunny. You can... like complete quest level from your career, which is like very heavy engineering effort. So it's like the engineering effort. We're paying video editors, content creators, and more stuff to help grow the business. And conferences, events can get quite expensive too. So right now we're reinvesting everything back into it because we both have like a pretty big savings account because we both like come from tech. So try to do that. And on the side, I personally just like do a lot of content creation, like for my own personal brand. So I do a lot of brand deals.
Okay, so 5 years tomorrow, which is perfect timing. Yeah. What are you most proud of with Design Buddies?
Ooh, oh man. I just love the community. I'm just like proud of like everyone being able to like be so nice. And like, I'm just like kind of surprised because like, I just like made it for fun. I mean, I was like in my parents' house being bored and sad. That's COVID. And it has evolved to like way more. And last year I've done a world tour. I've hosted events in 10 different countries and That's four crazy. Different continents. Basically had a quarter life crisis, quit my corporate job and traveled the world for 6 months. But along the way, I was like doing so many events and like 300 people came through in our Bangkok meetup, like 200 people in Singapore meetup. So I was just like, I'm really proud of like being able to like not only create local community, but global community.
Do you know where the biggest portion of the non-US community is based, or like where some large pockets are?
Yeah, UK, English speaking countries,
of course,
and India as well. Yeah. So I noticed like UK, India, and Canada.
That makes sense. Okay, I'm curious, like, your presence on let's start on LinkedIn. So you there, you started there in 2020, posting in earnest, I think. You're at, when I checked last night, you're at like 49,005 followers. Tell me about your relationship with an evolution on LinkedIn and the persona that you've built up there.
Yeah, LinkedIn, man. I used to think it was such an intimidating place. When I was a student, people always like flex about, oh my God, I got a software engineering job at Fang Company. I'm so better than everyone else. I got that kind of vibe. And I was just like, I'm scared. I am nobody. What is LinkedIn? And it kind of grew a lot. I just started just like, I noticed in 2020, people started posting more about their life on LinkedIn. And I was like, oh, because I've actually been a creator since like, for over 10 years, starting from like deep in art and Tumblr. And I've always talked about life and like deep stuff on like Tumblr, and it grew that way. So I was like, oh, okay. I kind of carried that over to LinkedIn, and people liked it a lot. And I started making friends, like personal friends. And LinkedIn, I started also documenting my journey learning in public because I was like really desperate to get a job. And I feel like a lot of hiring managers hang out on LinkedIn. So I desperately wanted to get their attention. So like,
still,
oh, look at
still
me.
Still a place to get a job at the end of the day.
Yeah. I was like, oh, look at me. I'm doing this design challenge. I'm building this community. Hire me, please. And I also like cold, how I got my first job at EA was I never applied. I actually like cold messaged 400 people on LinkedIn for coffee chats. Yeah. And then like when I cold message people, I want something on my profile that I can see. So I'm not just like a bot or like a nobody. I want to show that I am young, ambitious, junior designer, ready to rock and roll. So I'm trying to create that vibe.
Oh, you're a rock star designer.
Yeah, rock star designer, cold monkey, whatever. unicorn design. I don't know what that means. So I try to have that. And yeah, and then it just kind of grew that way. And then LinkedIn, I feel like I had moments lately where I just like have posts that went super viral, gained a couple thousand followers from those. It kind of like comes in waves.
Well, wait, okay. Like, so you're the best engaged LinkedIn post I could find is from a month or two ago. You're interviewing your quote unquote tech bro co-working crew about their salaries, which is a tried and true format. You're not the first person to do this, like, what's your salary type of question. Mm-hmm. People love it. People love the voyeuristic aspect of other people's money, right? There's a bit of that in this show. But that post has, as of last night, 102 reposts, 556 comments, and 11,177 likes, which is, I've seen very few posts that have more engagement than that. Do you know around how many views it has?
I have 75 million.
Jesus, wow.
On LinkedIn, it's like, I think because like it's like a weird ratio. There's like a lot of views compared to the amount of engagement it should have compared to like Instagram. Yeah. I think it's because the scrolling tab, like a new video tab on LinkedIn, people scroll through, and I think that counts as a view too. Yeah.
You know, I don't have that on my LinkedIn app. I have my LinkedIn app. I think I need to update my app. I know other people have had that for months. I don't have it.
Oh, I see. But yeah, I feel like LinkedIn has evolved into like TikTok a little bit, like Gen Z TikTok, Gen Z career TikTok. Yeah. People start posting more funny videos. There's this person on LinkedIn named Ken Chang.
He's amazing. Well, explain him for the audience.
Oh my God, Ken Chang. So just go on his LinkedIn. Hitting his tagline is like, I want to connect with you emotionally. And then one of his pinned posts was like, I sleep with a lot of women. And then let you guys. And then he was just like, I think, I'm just pull it up really
quick. He's like the first like true like LinkedIn poster who's like a LinkedIn comedian. Like he has really hit a nerve on like the LinkedIn comedy.
Yeah. He's amazing. I messaged him and he accepted my connection request and he's really nice. I had a little chat with him too. Because I just like, I like
his
content a lot.
He's a real person.
He is a real person. So just read to you. This is like what I think LinkedIn has evolved into. So I'll read this post as an example. So Ken Chang was like, I sleep with a little woman. What do you think tends to impress him the most? My multiple successful companies, my vast wealth, my perfect skin? No, it's my score on LinkedIn games. And then it's
And how many likes does it have?
Oh, and it has 6,198 likes and then 678 comments, 40 reposts. Yeah, this dude is amazing. He's like a legend on LinkedIn. But on LinkedIn side, there's a rise in videos. There's like, I talked to someone from the LinkedIn team. They're trying to get more people to post videos. Mm-hmm. And
this part of the clip of this very show, I can promise you, is going to go up there as a video.
I know. I love LinkedIn video. It's like the early days of TikTok where there's not a lot of people making videos yet. And so the videos that do get posted get a lot of views. Like a lot of my other salary videos have gotten like 5 million views, 10 million views. That one crazy. I don't know why. Oh, I think I know why. I think I know why I got 75 million views because people were like mad about two things in the comments. It was like mostly negative comments too on LinkedIn, which is like so rare. I'm so proud of myself for getting.
you were the hate as a point of pride.
Yeah, because I get people to feel something and engage. And it just like, it got me like 5,000 more followers on LinkedIn. And that's like the most engaged post ever in my life.
Yeah.
And people were mad about the fact that people in SF were making so much money because I interviewed my friend Zach, who's also a big creator on LinkedIn, and he was making 500K TC, not TC, probably like base salary from like Netflix as like a data scientist. People were so mad about that. And they were mad that I used the word tech bro. I live in a bubble and I call myself a tech bro. And I have just like a funny name. And people were like, so they took it far as like, oh no, you're like contributing to the bro culture and making it like anti-feminist. I'm just like, bro, that's not the point. I just like thought it was funny and cute. And I didn't mean that way. So people were like mad I did that. People thought I was like gross. But a lot of people recognized me on the streets in San Francisco and at events from that post.
That makes sense.
And at the gym too, from that post too.
Well, okay, a couple things here. One, I think, you know, I make my posts on LinkedIn too. I'm not the most active nor best poster. I know some people who are, and you know, I really, they're posting the selfies, the jokes, whatever, and help contributing to this culture of like anti-corporate earnest LinkedIn content. But I wonder if there's like a limit to that. Like, will that ever break through into being fully a culture on LinkedIn? Because at the end of the day, this is still a platform where people go to find a job. And I think that's what makes it good. And that's why there's that level of accountability of people generally like behaving in comments and stuff. So I was curious what you thought about that. Like what the few, like, because if everyone starts doing earnest anti-corporate LinkedIn posts, then it's not as interesting anymore, right?
I've noticed that people, maybe like mostly Gen Z people, want to bring more authenticity to the workplace. So I feel like for years, a lot of people that like they had to conform to different cultures to fit in and rise in the corporate ladder with people in the workplace. So I feel like people bring their full self to work. And I love that. I always want people to like not have to change themselves to fit in. And I see more of that vibe coming. It's like people like show like, oh, this is what I wear to work, or like, this is my life story, or like, this is, because I feel like people spend 40 hours a week on work. That's like so much of their life. And I think people shouldn't have to change or mask themselves to fit in. And I see more of that vibe on LinkedIn. So I don't think the unseriousness is tied to like job searching. And I feel like people like hiring managers, they also want to be themselves too. So I see more people just like showcasing their authentic self on LinkedIn instead of being like overly polished, very professional, suits and ties, all that too. And I feel like LinkedIn is shifting towards more of a creator platform. I'm very bullish on like B2B creators, or what my friend AJ calls like B2B to C creators. Like, I went to South by Southwest recently. I spoke there about LinkedIn content creation, and I've also went to a lot of creator events. And overall takeaways, like people are sleeping on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn doesn't pay creators directly, but for example, an average brand deal I get on LinkedIn is like $3,000 per post.
Oh, wow.
And there's a lot of, because like the audience is mostly business people, like more B2B audience. So companies want to pay more to attract these audience. Heard LinkedIn ads are also the most expensive. And I feel like more brands are recognizing the power of the reach and potential of LinkedIn and paying a lot of creators for brand deals. And I feel like a lot of creators are going to migrate to LinkedIn, but it also depends on the niche. So I am from San Francisco. I've been in LA for a week now, and I've noticed that a lot of creators, I don't think LinkedIn is for every creator, because a lot of LinkedIn is more like the business career, creators.
Yeah, because it's a place you go to get a job in a white collar field.
Not like not really lifestyle. Like I've tested this myself. Like a lot of my travel lifestyle posts doesn't perform nearly as well as my like how to get a job post on LinkedIn.
Well, see, that's the thing. Something you said a little bit ago about like bringing your whole self to work, or like and displaying that on LinkedIn. Like I would actually push back on that, because again, like your travel content not doing as well. Like that's part of it. there are limits. And like, I think that's why, like, that's what's good about LinkedIn, because there's this shared agreement that like, we're here to interact as professionals. Right. But I think that's also what puts like a fence on, like some people will never, who might even be quite active on LinkedIn, will never be too earnest because their earnest self won't perform and what would actually even like hurt their careers, right? So for me though, I think that's ultimately a good thing, because I'm very like, I think it's bad that all these different social platforms are collapsing into like trying to be everything else. Like nobody wants X, the everything app, right? I want Twitter, mm-hmm. the Twitter app, and I want Instagram, the Instagram, and I want TikTok, the short form video app, and I want LinkedIn, the jobs app. I'm not sure if I'm asking a question here. I'm just kind of getting on my soapbox. But
no, I get it. Yeah, no, I agree as well. Like I wouldn't post. I've just experimented with this. Yeah. And I feel like I have an Instagram that's more travel lifestyle, more fun, more troll.
You have two Instagrams too, right?
I have like five.
Two that I saw.
The main one. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like with Instagram, I just have to niche really down to get more followers. And that's why. Because I like to also have a nice feed. I don't want it to be like everything. That's why I have like five Instagram accounts.
Okay. Let's talk about money a little bit. So you were touching briefly on how lucrative the LinkedIn deals can be for you. Tell me first, what was the first dollar that you made as a creator?
Ooh, I feel like the most dollar as like a design buddies was like Adobe pay me $600 to host like an hour webinar, like a workshop with them. Mm-hmm. And I've known companies pay like $3,000 for like 30 minutes of your time to like speak to their company too.
But that was your first dollar as a creator.
Yeah, $600 for like an hour. And all
was
I
it like a
was
year
like,
or two? What, how far into Design Buddies was that?
Like 2 years into it. Actually a year. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. It's like 2021, 2022. And Design Buddies grew a lot in the beginning. Also, I did a lot of partnerships with people like Figma, Adobe, Framer as well, the classics, and it helps build a lot of brand credibility. And I was smaller at that time, so they're all been free because I just like thought they were cool and I want to build a relationship with them.
That's how they get you. But that's also it comes back to you too.
Yeah, and so I just did a lot that, and I partnered with student organizations. Like I try to like, I noticed like a lot of students when they discover Design Buddies, they share it with all their friends. Mm-hmm. So it's how we grew a lot too. So we just like did a lot of partnerships and it was like always for free. And then Adobe was like, oh yeah, we'll just like pay you $600 to do a webinar. I was like, what? I've just been doing these like three times a week for free.
I could get paid to do this?
Yeah. I was just like, all I had to do is like design a banner, make a Luma, copy and paste whatever copy they want and show up.
Okay. So that's your first dollar as a creator. How many different ways do you currently make money right now? And let's say like you can, maybe there's two buckets here. Like we kind of already talked about Design Buddies. So I'm more interested in like Grace as a creator.
Mm. Yeah. So I also have a podcast about how creators make money. So I run it with my friend, Justin Nguyen. We met on LinkedIn. He messaged me on LinkedIn like 5 years ago. We just became friends and we hung out a couple times in person and just like vibed. So there's that podcast. We're doing some brand deals. So right now we are reinvesting everything into the podcast, like hiring editors and all that and like subscriptions and stuff. But for myself, there's like a podcast, Design Buddies, but I also do content creation. So I also work with brands like Notion, Adobe, and they want to work with Grace for Grace, not Grace with Design Buddies. Like,
yeah.
Because like, I noticed like my audience on LinkedIn is mostly like a lot of creators, founders, not exactly designers. Mm-hmm. So I have that side of me too. So I make content for them.
So you're making content like for them that they post to their channels or that you post to your channels with them tagged, et cetera, or both?
Both. Well, okay, yeah. So it's just like typical brand deals where I like make a video, like a tutorial, or like I integrate them in my post, or I speak at their event. So there's like brand deal side for like non-Design Buddies audience. And there's also, I do speaking, like public speaking. I do a lot of these pro bono as well if I think it's like a big audience, but I feel like if it's like for a nonprofit, I'll do it pro bono. But if it's like a for-profit company and they're profiting off my likeness, and I charge very high for that too.
Good.
But I feel like speaking is a really great way to build an audience and get more people into your community. So it's like good marketing for me.
It's high touch. Yeah.
It's high touch, yeah, high value. Get engaged, speaking. So it's mainly the two main ways. And the other stuff is like design based, like just brand deals and speaking.
Okay, let's talk about how creators make money, your podcast for a second.
Yeah.
So I think it's 10 episodes out right now. Is this the first time you've hosted a podcast, or was there one I've missed?
Yeah, first time. I tried doing another podcast with Design Buddies. But I also felt like a mistake I made as like a community builder was like I felt like this is 2 years ago. I had such a perfectionist mindset. I wanted to be involved in everything. And it wasn't really scalable. Like, we got, like, 3 episodes deep. But I just felt like I was too much of a helicopter leader. And, like, I don't know. I just learned to trust people to execute and help them bring their own creativity and recognizing my ideas are not always the best one.
Learning curve for you as now that you're 10 episodes in as a new podcast host? What's the biggest learning curve?
Ooh, it was, like, I feel like the balance between being too scripted and having a fun conversation, because me and Justin, we want to have like the My First Million vibe, where we're just like two friends jamming together on content stuff. I've learned so much from him about sponsorship,
because he's podcasted a lot too, right, Justin?
He had like two podcasts, each with like 100-200 episodes each, so he's way more experienced
deeper
than I have. Yeah, and he also does a lot of brand deals. He's really good at negotiating with his business, the classified media for like college students and stuff. And so I've learned so much from him about podcasting, thumbnailing, writing copy, interviewing people. Like, he has such great questions too when I see him interviewing people. There's that. And I feel like the biggest learning curve was like the balance between being too scripted and just coming with topics and just like, Chinga is like, oh, I'm just catching up with a friend every week and just jabbing on, talking to shop. And I feel like people really enjoyed the episodes where we were less scripted and just more like vibes and taking tangents. And also me, like being in the creator economy space, since a lot of my experience has been design space, the creator economy, South by Southwest kind of like changed my life in a way that like, I
Say
basically
more.
Went yeah. because like Justin invited me, because he lives in Austin and he's like a super connector. He knows so many people. So I just hang around Justin, and then I would like meet all his friends, Justin and Jerry, his other friend that I stayed in his creator house. And so I just hang around them, and they're just like bring me to like a lot of people. And I just like, I learned there's so many people who are cool in the creator economy space. And there's so many like buzzwords. I'm just like new terms.
Yeah.
Like CPM and all that.
Wait,
stuff,
okay.
All the marketing.
So how do you, this is something I always ask people, how do you define the term creator?
I feel like people, for me, it's like sharing your content, sharing your like creativity. It could be like an artist too. People who share their creative works online. It could be like in any medium, like video, dancing, drawing, music, knowledge, anything who shares like online, who shares it with people.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. That's basically the definition I've gotten to, where it's like somebody making content for distribution online for an audience beyond people they know in real life, and also monetizing it, which I'm curious what you think of this idea that I've been kind of rolling around my head, is that the creator economy as such does not really exist, but it's a term that encompasses two labor models. There are gig workers who produce content for social media platforms that are monetized through revenue share with those platforms. And then there are small business owners, or large business owners, but business owners who either sell digital media products through subscriptions or sell their audience's attention to advertisers. So creator is a term encompassing these two labor models, the platform content gig worker and then the media business owner. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it makes sense. I also feel like people who are monetizing from the personal brand, just like being themselves and being like an entrepreneur in a way that they monetize through their own likeness and the content they create. But
they're
also
marketing them. They're marketing themselves for their business. Yeah,
marketing
yeah.
themselves, and the brand want to work with them for their likeness. So they're kind of like
you.
Yeah, like not really like an actor, but not like, I don't know. It's like
okay, no,
more
no,
like
wait,
an
wait.
Entrepreneur.
So this is this is kind of how I describe the term influencer, because to me, influencer is less useful now. Creator is a more useful term. But influencing is something that creators can do. And what an influencer does is there's somebody who has this market, this audience built in on this platform, and they sell that audience's attention to brands, or maybe not to brands. Maybe they're leveraging it to get leads for their company or to sell the whatever thing they make, right? But that is a good point. That's kind of a third model.
Yeah, it's kind of like being an actor a little bit. Like you're acting for like commercial kind of.
Yeah. You're selling.
Yeah, but also you're the brains. You're the creative director too. So it's like you're like kind of the whole thing. It's like a founder, but also like you're acting in it. You're like scripting it. You're directing it. You're filming it. You're running a team. So it's like
you're a business owner as well.
You're like everything.
You're the production house. You're the actor. You're the producer. You're the distributor.
Yeah.
Okay. I know we're getting a little over. So one more question. You quit your job 1 year ago and you founded Design Buddies 5 years ago. It's probably not very productive to ask you what you think you'll be doing or what your goals are for 5 years. Then maybe it is. Maybe that's something you think about. But in 1 year, 12 months from now, where would you like to be? What would you like to be doing?
I struggle with this question a lot because I kind of live in the moment and I feel like the moment is all we have. And I'll try to like do my best and enjoy life. But I always like to plan ahead to make sure what I'm doing in the moment correlates to those goals.
Yeah.
And
true.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and we can break this down specifically into three things, maybe. Design Buddies, you as a creator, and the How Creators Make Money podcast. Maybe those are three buckets. Maybe there's other buckets that I'm not aware of, but those are the three, I guess, that we've been talking about.
I really love like hosting parties. It's like really fun. Last year I kind of burnt out because I hosted like 35 events, and
that's a lot. Yeah, I read your 2004 wrap-up newsletter and like the list of events there. I was like, what?
Yeah, I don't understand either. But after taking 6 months of travel, I'm back. I'm fully back. I'm hosting events like every week again, but this time it's like for fun and I'm not really monetizing from my events and not having any KPIs to report to people because I just like hang out with people. It's like hang out with friends.
KPI is keep partying, idiot.
Yeah, And one of the long-term goals I have is like I want like a space, like a cute mansion in like all the big cities that I can like always like. I love traveling.
Okay, we haven't talked about your creator house, by the way. That's something we haven't talked. Maybe we should talk about that briefly.
Yeah. So me and my boyfriend, whose also name is Justin, we ran a content creator house together in Bali last year. That was one of the stops I made on my worldly travels. And it was really fun. We rented a villa for a month and invited our content creator friends. And we went on so many fun adventures, collaborated on content, learned from each other a lot. And we're doing it again in LA because I met so many friends in South by Southwest who live in LA. And I've been having a lot of business partners here in LA too. And I've been in the Bay Area my whole life and I just want to explore it. So it's like kind of like a trial run. It's like, how is living in LA like? And I love it. I actually am very sold on like doing half SF, half LA. But kind of like getting to like the two places living is like, I just feel like as a creator, there's so many opportunities everywhere and I just want to be everywhere.
Because it's easy to be, especially like when being a creator and it's focused on being online. I think this is something that I need to remind myself often is like life doesn't happen online. Like some things do, but like life happens in real life and you need to be in X place to meet Y person. You know, you're going to have a different conversation with this person sitting over a drink or a coffee than you are chatting in the DMs. Like not that it's not valuable to chat in the DMs and fun and build real relationships, et cetera, but like you can't really be in person.
Yeah, that's why. So I want to have like a mansion in all the big cities so I can like host events. I have a venue that I can gather people. I can decorate it really cute to make content in. And I can have like little hubs and just like be everywhere and have a place to live.
Is this
and
your dream business? Is that it's like Grace's like a mansion network of creator houses?
I don't know, actually. I'm still figuring that out. I also want to hire like a cook, a driver, I want to delegate someone to do all my chores, a cleaner. I am focused on creating and I just want to like be able to point where I can hire help of everything I don't want to do. that's my goal in a year or 5 years.
In a year, okay.
Maybe 5 years. Maybe 5 years. Yeah. Just want to have the mansion. Just like, yeah.
We'll see. Maybe you'll get there in 1 year. Maybe you'll get there in 5 years. We'll see. Is there anything else you wanna bring up before we bring it to a close?
Yeah. I also feel like I forgot to mention this earlier. Like, I actually missed working a lot when I was like on vacation. I just feel like I wasn't adding value to anyone's lives. I was just having fun, enjoying life. But it's like a good thing too. But just like, I'm always trying to find a balance of like focus on growing my team, also having fun. So just, I don't know, it's something I'm just like figuring out, but I definitely want more. I guess like when I'm really working towards like time and location freedom, I just want to be anywhere I want, but also growing at the same time. So I know it's like very vague, so I don't really know, but I'm always trying to like do random things and do things that grow my
distribution. Pursuing work as a social endeavor, work that connects you with other people and that helps you connect other people.
Yeah, I do this every day by posting on social media because I feel like the more I post, the more I increase my surface area of luck for more people to discover me and collaborate with me and grow more. So that's like the tiny stuff I do every day to get to that final goal.
There you go.
And attending events too. Yeah.
Where should people, there's a lot of places to find your work. You probably can't list them all, but where should people go to find your work?
Yeah, for Design Buddies, you can go to designbuddies.community. That's our website. We have all of our links there. I'm most active on LinkedIn and Instagram. So LinkedIn is just Grace Ling. I have a bunny emoji by my name. Instagram's I Run Grace Pace, IRUNGRACEPACE. So I'm mostly active there. I also have Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, but I'm not as active on those other platforms. So loved. And then you can join Design Buddies Discord at discord.gg/designbuddies. So hope to meet y'all. I would love to hear about your stories. And thanks so much for your interview. You asked so many great questions. I love how you added your own insights as well. This is lit. No cap. Big facts. Skibbity, Riz, Mewing, Giga Chat, Sigma, W's in the chat.
Okay, we'll end it there. Thank you for coming on.